The big announcement from Kenny Omega, as it turned out, had nothing to do with Kenny Omega's health. Kenny Omega was beaten up and left for dead by the Elite the end of last week's Dynamite. And then when they were carrying him to the ambulance last week, he got attacked again. And the last we saw him, he was dumped out on the pavement. So when they made the announcement that Kenny Omega was going to be back on the show this week, I said, can we at least keep the guy out for a week after you shot that big angle last week? I hope he's not going to walk down to the ring and be there live in the building to make an announcement. I was a little worried because they were in Canada, so maybe they would have sent him out there. But they didn't. Kenny Omega was laid up in his hospital bed. He is still one of the EVPs, and so he said that he had a special announcement to make for Matthew and Nicholas Jackson. And that announcement turned out to be Anarchy in the Arena is coming back yet again at Double or Nothing in a few weeks, live from Las Vegas. This has become an annual Double or Nothing staple. This will be the third straight year that they are doing an Anarchy in the Arena match. And I don't mind it being the kind of big annual match that they do at Double or Nothing. You know, WWE does War Games at Survivor Series every year now. The only issue I have with it is the fact that a few months later, 3 months after we had Anarchy in the Arena last year, we had a little something called Stadium Stampede at Wembley Stadium, which is basically the exact same thing. So what I would like to see, if they're going to do this again, do Anarchy in the Arena and be done with it. Wait until next year, and then you can bring it back again in 2025. But that is their big match coming up on the pay-per-view in just a few weeks. It will be the Young Bucks, it will be Jack Perry, and it will be Kazuchika Okada taking on FTR and two mystery men who they teased would be announced before the show was over, which was smart because they left you with a tease. They wanted you to stick around and tune in for the end of the show to find out who the two partners were going to be. And I'm going to wait and hold off on telling you who they are as well. That's called a tease. But we also had Adam Copeland defending the TNT championship on this show against Brody King. This is the second member of the House of Black that he has defended the title against in as many weeks as they continue to build to the eventual match, no doubt, between him and Malakai Black, which I am very excited about if for no other reason. How often do we get to see Malakai Black in singles matches? So we know that's coming up very soon. The match they had tonight on the show, they made it no disqualification. We get a lot of these types of matches on AEW television. We get a lot of no disqualification type matches. We get a lot of plunder. We get a lot of blood. We get a lot of that stuff. It actually fit the story, though, that they were telling with Adam Copeland and everything the House of Black has been saying about him and trying to pull out of him now for the last several weeks. The blood, the violence, the kind of the violent tendencies that he had in that match tonight. It fits the story that they have been telling with him and Malakai Black. That aspect of it I like. The match itself, you know, it's funny. I found myself sitting here watching it, and there was nothing wrong with it. I mean, they were beating the hell out of each other, and there were some big spots. But I feel like at this point, maybe I'm just desensitized to it on these AEW shows. I don't know, because it feels like we get some variation of this type of match every single week to where it just doesn't have the same effect when you do it week to week on TV. But there were a lot of other things on this show tonight. I think on the whole, it was a good show. I can't sit here and tell you that I am, you know, just booming out of my seat because of all of these exciting, great stories that they're telling right now in AEW. They are telling stories. We do have different feuds. They did, you know, we saw a lot of them play out on TV tonight. In different promos, like with the ladies hyping up two big women's title matches coming up at Double or Nothing. It was all talking segments tonight. Willow Nightingale had a talking segment in the back. And Willow Nightingale is very good. She's very good in the ring. She's very good on the microphone. She's likable. She's genuine. She's easy to root for. We had Mercedes Moné in a backstage promo late in the show that really wasn't very good. And she almost, in a lot of ways, is the antithesis of Willow, which is why I think she's actually miscast and would be much better as a heel. Because you watch her, even in that promo tonight when she was in the back talking about how I'm going to be courtside at the Boston Celtics game, and I'm going to be throwing out the first pitch at the Boston Red Sox game, and I, you know, really putting herself over. And I just thought to myself, she's the heel going into this match. That's what she is. She is the heel. There are very few people on this roster who are more full of themselves than Mercedes. So how is she supposed to be the babyface going into this match? She's not. I didn't think that promo was all that great. I am looking forward to the match. I just want to see her back in the ring. It's been far too long. It's been a year now. I don't know if she's medically cleared yet even. I still am scratching my head trying to figure out why they had to debut her on TV that early if she wasn't ready to be back in the ring, considering they've done absolutely fuck all with her over the last several weeks. She showed up in Boston in mid-March. We're now almost in mid-May. What exactly has Mercedes done on this show in the last 2 months? She did commentary for one match. She's made a couple of appearances, little run-in appearances. She hasn't done much. But at least we're getting closer now to her in-ring return, her in-ring debut here in AEW. And then there were just a bunch of other segments on the show that built up things for Double or Nothing coming up in a few weeks. So it was a mixed bag, more good than bad. But again, there's just an excitement level that's lacking right now on this show. It's just not there. The big angle, you know, the big angle is the elite angle. And they're putting a lot of focus and a lot of attention on that, as they should. But I just can't sit here and say that there's a lot of other things going on the show that have me excited right now. Hopefully that will change. This is your AEW Dynamite review. It is Wednesday, May 8th, 2024. I am the Solemn Monster. Do me a favor. Like, subscribe, and super chats are open as well if you would like to drop one. They are open. I will read them a little bit later on here in the stream. I am very excited, though. I did notice something before I went live here, that we are less than 100 subscribers away from 80,000 here on the channel. Looks like we're going to hit it a lot sooner than I thought, possibly in these next few days. But that's going to be up to you guys. So if you have not yet subscribed to the channel, now would be a good time to do so. We are very, very close to 80K, so I thank you for that. I also want to say thank you before we get into this here. And by the way, Bash says, so you're saying the Jericho stuff was good? No, I didn't say anything about the Jericho stuff. I will talk about the Jericho stuff, and I will give you my thoughts on the Jericho stuff, and I will make you wait to find out what I thought of the Jericho stuff. See, that's another one of those teases. You're going to have to wait and find out. I will say, though, well, I won't say it yet. I don't want to give it away. But what I was going to say is thank you to everybody who tuned in last night over on JD's channel, JD from New York. We had our debut episode of Tuesday Night Titans, technically episode 47, but my first episode with him. I saw a lot of familiar faces migrating over there to show their support and be part of that first show, including some people who are in the chat right now. So that was very cool to see. If you missed it, go check it out. I think you'll enjoy it. It's a good discussion. Already over 40,000 views, 3,300 likes, 200 plus comments. You guys killed it. And that's going to be fun every Tuesday night at 8:30 over on JD's channel. But the debut episode, you rocked it. And thank you guys for showing me the love last night. I appreciate that. So let's get into this show here. We got a cold open intro. A little bit of a different intro. We don't usually get cold opens like this in the back with Dynamite quite this way, where Adam Copeland was walking down the hallway and he got cornered by their new backstage interviewer, Arkady Aura, who was taking the place of Renee Paquette, who is not on the show tonight. I don't know where she was, especially because they were in Canada. I'm a little surprised, actually, that she was not on the show. Unless she is over in Japan. Is Moxley over in Japan right now? I think he may be. So I wonder maybe if she's over there with him. That's possible. But anyway, Arkady Aura was there to interview Copeland, and Copeland said that he didn't have a good feeling about this House of Black stuff, this whole situation. He says, bring the camera in tight. So just off the phone with Tony Khan, and my match with Brody King tonight for the TNT title is going to be no disqualification here in Edmonton. Said you wanted the Rated R Superstar? Tonight, you got him. And fans in Edmonton loved hearing that. And then it was to the ring for our opening contest, which was a grudge match between Orange Cassidy and Trent Beretta. This is a good example of something where they are telling a story with these guys. I can't sit here and tell you it's a story that I care much about. I really don't. I really don't. I didn't care about the best friends before. Now that the best friends are imploding and feuding with each other, I'm happy that it means no more best friends. But again, it's hard to get excited about this. Excalibur talked about Chuck Taylor needing surgery due to the attack by Trent Beretta a few weeks ago. Said it would most likely be a career ender for him. Paul Turner called for the bell. Cassidy and Beretta, they immediately threw punches at each other. Trent ducked out to the ring, ringside area, and he got hit by a suicide dive. Cassidy ran Beretta into the ring post. They showed a countdown clock in the upper right-hand corner of the screen, counting down to the Swerve Strickland-Christian Cage face-off on this show. I like that. I like that because it reminded me of the Cody countdown we used to get for a while on Raw, not long after he came back to the company. But I like it because it made the champion segment feel important. So Cassidy and Beretta, they fought into the crowd, up the steps. You see lots of Edmonton Oilers jerseys in the crowd because there's a playoff game tonight against the Canucks, which I think is already in progress. So, of course, everybody was all excited about that. They fought back to ringside where Cassidy got backdropped hard over the barricade to the floor. It looked like he landed on his shoulder. But then when he got up, he tripped Beretta, who was standing on top of the barricade. And as he fell shoulder first into the top of the barricade and then fell to the floor. Back inside, Beretta hit a knee strike. Cassidy came right back with an orange punch. Both men were down. So here comes Don Callis, who, of course, gets a ton of heat here from the crowd. You remember Orange Cassidy when he was on stage last week being separated from Trent, who came out, Don Callis. And he and Orange Cassidy, they leapt shoulder and shoulder. So here he comes again. He took a seat at the announce desk. He was on commentary for the entire show after this because Taz was not there. Taz is having some knee issues. He had, I think, a procedure done. He's not able to travel. So at least for this week, Don Callis took his place. Both men slugged it out when things came back from picture in picture. Beretta countered a Stun Dog Millionaire, could not avoid the spinning DDT. Beretta comes back with a pile driver. Not the last pile driver he would deliver here in this segment. In fact, he followed it up with a second one. Then a running knee strike once Cassidy got back to his feet. There still had not been a single attempt at a pinfall in this match. I like that. They build this as a grudge match. When you consider what's gone down the last few weeks involving these men, it shouldn't so much be about that. It should be about them wanting to kill each other. So Tony Schiavone pointed that out. I thought that was good. Beretta went to the corner. He removed one of the turnbuckle pads. That got the referee's attention. But meanwhile, in the opposite corner, Orange Cassidy pulled the opposing turnbuckle pad off, unbeknownst to Trent, who came charging in. And he got driven into the exposed steel. He got rolled up with a schoolboy to give the win to Orange Cassidy. After the match, Trent was not happy, and he blindsided Cassidy on the outside. Then he went and he pulled the ring steps out, about a foot away from the post. And he grabs Orange Cassidy, and they get on top of the steps, and Trent Beretta delivers a pile driver on top of the ring steps to Orange Cassidy. Okay, he drops this man on his head. Third pile driver of this segment, first one on top of the ring steps. That should have been enough. The attack continued, though. He got Cassidy on the floor outside, and he catapulted him up into the underneath beams from the ring, the underbelly of the ring, throat first, catapulted him up into it. Now Cassidy grabs his neck like he can't breathe, right? So like a vicious attack here. And Trent is not done yet. Trent goes to the other side of the ring by where the announcers are. He goes under the ring and he fishes out a toolbox. Now they cut to Orange Cassidy on the opposite side of the ring outside. He has recovered enough that he has grabbed a chair to defend himself. He is now on his feet. So now we have a stalemate here between these two men, because there's Trent with a toolbox. There's Orange Cassidy with a steel chair. And now here come people to get between them. Now, here's my question. Why the hell is Orange Cassidy taking a pile driver on top of the steel ring steps, let alone a catapult into the steel beams underneath the ring? And not 60 seconds later, he is already back up on his feet with a steel chair in his hand. I mean, what are we doing here? I saw this. I said, wait, am I seeing this right? Did I not just see this man get dumped on his head on top of the ring steps? You could do an injury angle based on that alone. Here he is standing with a chair. Referees come out. Chris Statlander comes out. Don Callis gets up from the announce desk. He goes over to get between them. He's calling Beretta a crazy man. He's trying to protect Orange Cassidy. Like I said, Chris Statlander is out there. She's going over to Trent. What the hell are you doing? Referees get between the two of them. She's pleading with Beretta to stop. And Callis walks with Cassidy to the back. The match itself actually had good heat. Crowd seemed to be into the match. Match I thought was fine. There was nothing wrong with it. The post-match is what absolutely annoyed the shit out of me. Trent snaps. He pile drives this man on the ring steps. He does all these things to him. And yet he's back up on his feet seconds later. I don't understand it. Now, they've always booked Orange Cassidy like some fucking suit, like skinny Superman, who, you know, no matter what you do to him, he just won't stay down, right? He had that international title reign, all the people he beat, all the big moves, all the punishment that he took. He would show up every single week. He looked like the Walking Dead. He would do these interviews with Renee. I don't feel well, I'm hurt, my arm hurts, my leg hurts, my dick hurts, this hurts, that hurts, and yet somehow he would find a way to win, right? They've always booked him like Superman in a lot of ways. But this is ridiculous. You could have done the exact same thing and had Statlander run out, and have Callis go over and say, enough, enough, and have the referees run out while Orange Cassidy is down on the mat selling his injuries. Why are we doing these spots and these big moves, these big dramatic moves, and then just having him stand up like it doesn't mean jack shit? That's the kind of stuff that drives me up the fucking wall, and I don't understand why they do that. So that practically ruined the entire thing for me. I just thought that was too much, but the match itself was fine. It had good heat. Now, earlier today, the Elite were shown arriving in a car. They pulled into Tony Khan's parking spot. I didn't catch if it was a handicap parking spot because he is injured. He is walking around with a neck brace, so he could probably get a handicap parking pass. But they pulled into the boss's spot, even though he was not there. Then we got a video package from last week showing Kenny Omega's return, how that ended up with him being attacked by the Elite. They also then cut to comments from Jack Perry, which were recorded backstage last week after the angle, talking about how Omega is not as good as he thinks he is. And he says that what hurt him the most is that Omega was not the hero that they needed him to be, because AEW doesn't need him anymore. He says everyone has to sacrifice, and Omega made his. It was short. Didn't go very long here, but I thought it was good delivery from Perry. Promos are not his strong suit. He is not known as being a great promo. Can he be a great promo one day? Sure, it's possible. He's not there yet. For what this was, though, I thought it was fine. Then it was time for Kenny Omega's big announcement, which surprised me because I thought they were going to save this for later in the show. But they were going right to it. And again, I'm looking at this going, he better not walk out there on his own two feet. Maybe if he goes out there in a wheelchair, maybe, right? But, you know, he's a big baby face. They're not going to wheel him out there in a wheelchair. So he was actually not there live in the building, at least not on camera. They cut to a hospital bed, and he's in his hospital gown. He's hooked up to all the IVs and everything. He said he appreciated Matt Jackson reminding him that the attack last week wasn't personal. It was just business. He said, speaking of business, on May 26th. That day will mark the 5-year anniversary of when it all started. And he said, you know, I'm kind of new to this matchmaking thing, but he is an EVP. And so he was making a match for that show with the Elite. So the Young Bucks, Jack Perry, and Kazuchika Okada. And they will be taking on what he called Team AEW, which will include one of the greatest tag teams of all time and two men who had the guts to stand up to the two of them, FTR, and two other individuals who he is sure will step up, because it's on a first-come, first-served basis. He is sure that these other two people will step up later on tonight to take those two spots. And so I thought this was smart. This was a smart way to tease the mystery man angle for later in the show, try to keep people tuned in so they don't tune out. I don't know that it worked, but you got to try. And so I thought that was a smart way to go about doing it. But he announced it as Anarchy in the Arena. So it will be the Elite against Team AEW, Anarchy in the Arena. As I said at the beginning, Anarchy in the Arena has become an annual tradition the last couple of years at Double or Nothing. I don't have an issue with that being the annual staple. It is no different than War Games every November. And there were a lot of people who were very happy to see War Games be brought up to the main roster, and you don't see them bitching about War Games happening every year. So it's the same thing. But my issue, if I have an issue with it, my only issue with it is that they go overboard, and they did Stadium Stampede in August at Wembley. I wouldn't be surprised if they do it again at Wembley this August. They're the same thing. Anarchy in the Arena and Stadium Stampede, they are literally the same fucking match. If you're going to do this, and if this is going to be your annual staple, that's cool, but that should be it. You do it once a year, you save it for Double or Nothing, it'll mean more. The more often you do a match like this, it just doesn't have the same value. It just doesn't have the same appeal anymore. Some people might say that even about it being once a year, you know, but I think that's fine. But to do Anarchy in the Arena and then turn around 3 months later and do Stadium Stampede, just because it's in a stadium and not an arena, it's the same fucking match. So anyway, the tradition here continues. If you are going to do a match like that, though, if you are going to do Anarchy in the Arena, you want to make sure you have a strong angle for it. And they are building everything around the Elite. The Elite is the big angle. They beat up the Boss. They beat up Kenny Omega, right? They're running wild on the entire show. They're running the whole operation here. So if you're going to do a match like this, then the Young Bucks and Okada and Jack Perry, they should be involved. Tony Schiavone was on stage to introduce Serena Deeb ahead of her women's world title match, which is coming up at Double or Nothing against Toni Storm. She said losing to Toni Storm at Double or Nothing is not an option for her. And she's about to get into this serious promo here and talk about her 15 months off. And then she goes into this talk about these unprovoked seizures that she had that kept her out of the ring. And like right before she really gets into like the emotional part of it, she's being shouted down by fans who were chanting for the Oilers. And she just kind of laughed. She didn't really know how to react to it. And now she's getting into the stuff about seizures and everything. And I'm just like, okay, please, like, don't start yelling over her when she's trying to get into like this thing that almost killed her. You know what I mean? But they behave themselves. She starts talking about the unprovoked seizures from last year. She said doctors couldn't understand why it was happening. She talked about having a vision of becoming the AEW Women's World Champion during her downtime. Timeless Toni Storm makes her entrance and joins Serena and Tony Schiavone on stage. And Storm called Deeb a charity case, and she threw money at her. Actual dollar bills. She called, the big line here of the promo, she says, she doesn't give a single solitary shit about what Serena Deeb has gone through. There you go. I don't care about your sob story. I don't care about your seizures. I don't care what your doctor said. I don't give a solitary shit about any of that. Quote, Timeless Toni Storm, 2024. Should frame that, put that on the fucking wall here somewhere. So they went face to face. Serena turned to go leave. Tony grabbed her by the arm, tried to hit her. Deeb, though, blocked it and then knocked her out with one punch and laid her out. End scene. Backstage, Lexi Nair checked on Orange Cassidy in the trainer's room. Rocky Romero walked in, and he told Cassidy that Tony Khan informed him that if he can beat Jay White tonight, that he, Orange Cassidy, and a partner of their choice would get a shot at the trio's titles. This man is sitting here. He's got an ice pack on his neck. He just got dropped on his head on the ring steps. And now he has to hear Rocky Romero run in and go, "Ooh, ooh, ooh, guess what? We can wrestle for the trio's titles now." I would look up and go, "Fuck off and get out of here." Not only that, he says, "We could go with Ishii as our partner. We could go with Shibata as our partner." And then he has the gall to say, "Or maybe we can even just mend fences and make up with Trent." And then Orange Cassidy had a look on his face like he had the same reaction that I did to what this man just said. Like, are you fucking stupid? He had the same reaction that I had when I heard him utter that line. After what we just saw, and the man who supposedly may have retired Chuck Taylor forever. Well, maybe we could just kind of patch things up and we could go win the trios titles together. Yeah! Rocky Romero ain't too bright up here, is he? So, of course, Orange Cassidy said no. He goes, "We'll figure it out." And he wished Romero luck in his match later on. This is what this man does. He comes in here and says, "Hey, we could wrestle for the trios titles. Maybe we could even bring Trent back into the fold." This week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. It's been a busy week for wrestling fans. Busy month, really. A lot of content to consume, and that's to say nothing of all the content that I consume on Netflix. Raw hasn't moved there yet. But did you know that Netflix has thousands of shows in its library, but you only have access to a fraction of it? It's true. They have different content available depending on where you're located. It's insane that you're paying for Netflix and not getting access to everything that it has to offer. Watching Netflix without using ExpressVPN is like paying for a gym membership but only being able to use the treadmill. Why would you do that? You wouldn't. And you shouldn't have to here either. So how do you unblock all of that extra content? Well, I'm glad you asked. ExpressVPN lets you change your online location so you can control where you want Netflix to think you're located. They have almost 100 different server locations, so you can gain access to thousands of new shows. And it doesn't just work with Netflix. You can use it with other streaming services like BBC iPlayer and YouTube. I like watching reruns of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. We were just talking about that on the stream the other night. I wish Uncle Phil were my uncle. I love Uncle Phil. Recently, I was able to watch it on Indian Netflix. It was simple. I just opened the ExpressVPN app. I selected India as my country. I tapped one button to connect. Then I refreshed Netflix and boom, there it was. And you can do this with tons of other shows, too. If you're a fan of the original Star Trek series, you can find that on UK Netflix. It's actually kind of fun to fish around and see what you can find in different places. What I love about ExpressVPN, though, is how fast it is. I never experience any lag, no buffering, and it's compatible with all my devices, including my smart TV and my phone. It also encrypts my data so I can browse the web securely with no prying eyes. So be smart. Stop paying full price for streaming services and only getting access to a fraction of their content. Get your money's worth at expressvpn.com/solomonster. Don't forget to use my link at expressvpn.com/solomonster to get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. Mariah May against Harley Cameron with Saraya in her corner. Don Callis, as I said, he was still on commentary because Taz was not on the show. Cameron attacked at the start, series of kicks, and a shining wizard for two. She suckered Mariah in with a high kick and then dragged her to the floor when she was then beaten up by Saraya as things went to commercial. Later on, Mariah fired off a headbutt, followed that with the top rope missile dropkick. That set the stage for a sweet cheek music attempt in the corner, but Saraya pulled Cameron to the floor. Mariah went outside, she leveled Saraya, and then back inside, she got met with an inside cradle for two. But Mariah popped up and connected on Mayday for the win. After the match, Saraya attacked Mariah along with Harley Cameron. They both were beaten up on Mariah until Mina Shirakawa from Stardom ran out to make the save. Saraya threw Harley in front of her and then bailed out of the ring. And poor Harley took a spinning back elbow. Mariah then picked up Mina to celebrate. And Mina faked a kiss on the lips before she stopped short. Everybody booed. And Mina called for two glasses of champagne, which just so happened to be prepared and waiting for them. Which makes me wonder, is this a common occurrence here? Where they keep glasses of champagne ready outside the ring at all times. You know, that would actually explain a lot as far as the officiating in this company. If they have bottles of fucking liquor and champagne outside the ring at all times, that explains a lot. That might explain Rick Knox in a nutshell right there. And the AEW medical staff. But there you go. You got your two glasses of champagne and they toast each other and they have a nice drink in the ring here. You know, I will say for a woman who has not wrestled a match, Harley Cameron has not wrestled an AEW match. She does some indie stuff. Since March of 2023. That was the last time we saw her on television in an AEW ring in an actual match. All things considered, she was better than I expected her to be. This was not bad. And I think Mariah May is actually very good. So this turned out to be better than I thought it would be. And, you know, it's interesting because Mariah May has gotten a lot of ring time on these shows over the last several weeks. And they have a pretty big women's division. A lot of those women do not get FaceTime on Dynamite. Mariah May is getting a lot of FaceTime on Dynamite, which I totally understand, and I am in full support of. But what's good about it also is it's the repetition, right? It would be easy to put her out there, she wins a match, and then we don't see her for 6 weeks. Or she's on Collision, but not Dynamite. They're putting her on TV pretty consistently, and she's racking up wins. And that's how you get somebody over, so I like that. Because I have taken notice that she's gotten a lot of FaceTime on these shows over the last several weeks. They also played up on commentary that it was Mina and not Toni Storm who came out to make the save for Mariah. So that is something to keep an eye out for. Our Kitty Aura was backstage with Pac and asked if we are going to see a Death Triangle reunion anytime soon. Apparently not. Apparently he's injured again. We had to pull him from the House of Glory show this past weekend. So unfortunately, Rey Fénix is, I guess you must have tweaked something. I don't know all the details, but he is hurt again. So, yeah. Yeah, I don't think we're going to be getting a Death Triangle reunion anytime soon. So Pac is just standing there, and he's looking off into the distance like he's in a catatonic state. His hair is all mussed. And then finally, he speaks up and he says he's not concerned at the moment with Death Triangle, only then to be interrupted by Bullet Club Gold. As they are walking by, and I will continue to refer to them as Bullet Club Gold because that's what they are. So they mock Pac losing to Okada at Dynasty, questioned if Jay White should go after the international title, being that he knows a thing or two about beating Kazuchika Okada. But first, he needs to go out and beat Rocky Romero. That came a little bit later on in the show. The AEW World Heavyweight Champion, Swerve Strickland, was out to the ring without Prince Nana. He did not look happy at all. Swerve said that he was really pissed off tonight, and he pitched it to footage of what Christian and the Patriarchy did to him last week, which ended with Killswitch ripping one of the dreads out of his head, and then they held it up like a trophy. Strickland said that he is the Connor McDavid of All Elite Wrestling, which got a big pop from the fans in Edmonton. Apparently, he was someone in Edmonton. I'm assuming he was a big Oilers player, right? I'm not the biographer for Mr. McDavid, but he got a big enough pop that he must be somebody there, so. So he told Christian Cage to get his ass out here. He wanted Christian and the rest of the Adams family to get their asses out here so they could have a conversation. Christian and company walk out. And they stay on the ramp. He pointed out Swerve is standing in the ring in the self-proclaimed City of Champions, but he hates to break it to Edmonton. There will not be any championships this year because in a few hours, he can't wait to see the Canucks stomp the Oilers. And he has decided that he is also going to take something from Swerve every single week in the lead up to Double or Nothing. Swerve has been riding this wave of momentum, and he rode it all the way to the AEW World title. But the funny thing about waves is that they always crash. And at Double or Nothing, it's going to crash at his feet. Swerve, you are not in my league. I am the patriarch of AEW. I am the face of TBS. I am the face of TNT. And I deserve to stand at the top of the mountain as the World Heavyweight Champion. But after Double or Nothing, when the dust settles, you can take comfort in knowing that when Swerve's house has been foreclosed on, you can see gold whenever you want. All you need to do is look in the mirror at those stupid gold teeth. Unless I take those from you right now. And so Connor McDavid is not a former player. Well, then I have no idea who he is, nor do I care. So Swerve said, I told your ass that I wasn't coming alone. And at that point, the Mogul Embassy enters the ring. I guess they must have come out of the crowd. So we have the Gates of Agony. We have Brian Cage. And I could see exactly where this is headed. Poor Swerve, of course, he can't see shit. So they're all standing behind him as his backup in the ring. Swerve said that he wants Christian to get in the ring so bad he could beat his ass down so bad like Kendrick Lamar did to Drake this past weekend. And that won't be the last time someone from the West Coast took out a fake father from Toronto. He says, come on, get in here. You got here playing the politic game. I had to work my ass off and get beaten down and get back up to become the world champion. Don't you forget that. So I dare you. Come get it. Come take my gold teeth. Come take my gold championship. Swerve was showing a lot of fire here. Hey, Midmo Smark, good to hear from you, brother. Thank you, sir. So Swerve goes, oh, that's right, you won't. That would put Christian in a very uncomfortable position, wouldn't it? And we all know when Christian is faced with a very uncomfortable position, he's going to say, I quit. I believe that was a reference to when Christian had a board of nails hammered into his ball sack. Yes, I would say that most people in that situation would say, I quit. So Christian was shook. He had no response. They showed him on camera. He's standing there. He has nothing to say. But he didn't have to say anything because all of a sudden, Brian Cage blasted Swerve Strickland from behind. And then the Gates of Agony laid a beatdown on him. They each grabbed Swerve. They threw him up into the air, basically like in a powerbomb position. And that's exactly how Brian Cage caught him on the way down. He caught him and delivered a powerbomb. Then Cage press slammed him over the top rope all the way down to the floor. Cage went outside. Brian, not Christian. And he cleared off the announce desk while the Gates of Agony, they dragged the ring steps over by the desk. Boy, I hope they don't pile drive somebody on them. So they dragged the steps over by the announce desk and they end up planting Swerve. They stand on top of the steps and they plant Swerve through the announce desk as Christian smirks from the aisle and he and the other members of the patriarchy left together. So Christian did, in fact, it should be noted that Christian did take something from Swerve. He took his posse away from him. So you might even say Swerve got swerved here on this show. They cut to the back. The Young Bucks are in Gorilla. They're applauding Christian and his crew as they walk back through the curtain. Christian credits them with the idea and said this was the start of a very fruitful working relationship. And then they walked off. And Matt turned to Nick and said, that wouldn't be considered a bitch move, would it? And Nick said, not at all. And they shared a nice laugh. I like that they're keeping the beef alive with Swerve and the Elite. Swerve made two comments on Collision and then Dynamite last week where he called what the Elite did to Tony Khan a bitch move. And that right there was a seed being planted for the Elite to take issue with the champion, and they're going to start causing problems for him. So here, they're continuing that angle. They are weaving the Young Bucks here into a story with Swerve, which they need to do. Because if the Elite and the Bucks, if they're going to be the top story in this company, the worst thing they could do is position Swerve, and they already are, positioning him as secondary to the Young Bucks and the Elite. We're going into a Double or Nothing pay-per-view where I'm not even sure Swerve is going to be in the main event. My guess would be Anarchy in the Arena is going to be the main event. Swerve and Christian is going to be a fantastic match. Swerve and Christian does not scream top feud in the company. It's secondary to whatever the Elite are doing. It's already happening. So the sooner that they could get these guys together and actively bring Swerve into this story where he is going to pick a fight with the Elite, maybe they send Jack Perry after him, maybe they hire, you know, other people in the company to do their dirty work for them, it'll be better for Swerve because that way we know that he is involved in the top story in the company, which right now he is not. But they're planting little hints for you. But it's also, you know, look, what they did here with the angle, it's a good way to put more heat on Christian. He didn't have to do anything physical tonight. But again, my concern is just making sure that coming out of Double or Nothing, Swerve is not slotted here with the Elite slotted here. I don't want to see it be that way until the time comes that he drops the title. And he gets like a Chris Jericho title run, like when he was the world champion the first time in WWE, right? You have these title runs where somebody becomes world champion there over the years, but they're not really the top guy. That's kind of what Swerve feels like right now. It can't be like that. I mean, it's going to be for a few more weeks. Coming out of Double or Nothing, it can't be that way. In the back, we had the TBS champion, Willow Nightingale, who was being interviewed. She said that she wasn't feeling well physically, but she pointed to the shiner on her face. But emotionally and otherwise, she's doing great. The question isn't, is she ready for Mercedes Moné at Double or Nothing? It's, is Mercedes ready for Willow? And she said that she's sorry that Mercedes got hurt in their match last year, but since then, she's been on the run of her life, winning the Strong Women's title, winning the Owen Hart Cup, now winning the TBS title. Double or Nothing, Mercedes better be ready for the fight of both their lives. Good promo. Again, short and to the point, but great emotion, great fire from her. Again, she's very likable. She's a great baby face. And she's actually a pretty good promo. And so far, in this back and forth that they've had, in my opinion, a much better promo than Mercedes. We had Switchblade Jay White one-on-one with Rocky Romero. White was in control heading into the break. Rocky later on hit a sliced bread for an ear fall. Jay White came back with a brainbuster and then hit Blade Runner for the win. The Guns attacked Rocky when the match was over. So here comes Pac. They play his music. He does the slow walk to the ring. I can't really say he was in a rush to get there. So he walks down to the ring. White and the Guns, they grab their 9 belts. 9. And they exit the ring. Yes, they are now carrying around 9 championship belts when they come down to the ring. They have the regular AEW Trios titles. They have the Ring of Honor 6-man tag team titles, which I thought we were done with these. They were unified. They're still out there. And they have the pink belts that the Acclaim were going around with, the scissor belts that they had when they were the Trios champions. So they come out there to the point where Jay White was carrying around, you know how when WWE does these ladder matches? And they did it at WrestleMania. They have that contraption that the titles are hanging from. It's like a bar, like a gold bar. He walks around with that because there's so many belts. There's so many of them. And I'm looking at this and I'm just like, I thought these titles were unified. Now, I know that Roman Reigns for the longest time walked around with 2 belts over his shoulder because they just liked the way it looked. even that eventually they merged it into one. Unified should mean one set of tag team titles. The fact that the Ring of Honor six-man titles are still physically present on this show worries me, because it means that perhaps at some point they would consider bringing them back. They should not be brought back. They should be retired, and they should be off of television. Speaking of which, I'll get to Chris Jericho in a second. But they should be retired and off of television. Why do they need to walk around with 9 belts? As if we don't have enough belts on television in this company. We have the AEW World title. We have the TNT title. We have the International title. We have the TBS title. We have the Women's World title. We have the FTW title. We have the Trios titles. We have the Ring of Honor six-man titles. What's that other title? We had the Moxley. He was defending the IWGP title a few weeks ago. A couple of other titles I can't remember off the top of my head. I can't even keep track of them all. Get rid of them. Get rid of those Ring of Honor six-man belts. I don't want to look at them. I don't want to give them any ideas to reinstate them. They're completely unnecessary. Speaking of completely unnecessary, that brings us to the learning tree. Chris Jericho. Him and Big Bill against local town. Before I even get into the Jericho stuff, you know, Pac coming out. My guess is that we're going to get a Trios title match. It's even though Rocky lost, okay, remember what Rocky Romero said, Tony Khan said, if I could beat Jay White, we're going to get a crack at the Trios belts. They may get a crack at the belts anyway. And it may just be Rocky Romero, Orange Cassidy, and Pac taking on Jay White and the Guns. What I would like to see, and what I am hoping we see at Double or Nothing, is one-on-one Pac and Jay White. That's the match I want to see. I don't give a shit about the Trios titles. I don't give a fuck about the Trios titles. I want to see Pac and Jay White one-on-one. Give me that match. Back to the learning tree. Chris Jericho. Big Bill. Against local talents Mo Jabari and Harlan Abbott, who actually got a nice reaction from the crowd. And I don't know if they actually knew who these guys were because they've seen them work local independent shows, or they just announced them as local talents and everyone said, yay! I don't know. But they got a little pop. Little pop. So Jericho acted like a 1980s fiery baby. He was like fucking Tommy Rich out here in this match. To start out against Jabari, he quickly tagged in Big Bill, who delivered a series of corner splashes, a pair of big boots, a boss man slam, a couple of choke slams, one for you so you don't feel left out. Then Jericho tagged in. He hit one Judas effect on Abbott, and then he pinned him. Now, after the match, Jericho thanked the fans, and he said, "It's always a pleasure to come back to Calgary," before quickly correcting himself and saying Edmonton. And the fans were not happy about that. And the fans chanted, "You fucked up," at him. Now, I'm hoping they only did that to play along and they didn't actually think he fucked up. Clearly, he did not. And it got exactly the reaction that he was hoping it would get. So he got good heat. Jericho said, you know, he apologized. He goes, "Sometimes you make mistakes when you're creating memories for people all over the world." He said he wishes that he could be on Dynamite for 2 hours straight. And I thought, is that a threat? Remember Cornholio from Beavis and Butthead? Are you threatening me? Yeah, let's not joke about that. Because you know that if he had the chance to, he would do it in a heartbeat. So Jericho thanked Big Bill. And he also thanked Katsuyori Shibata and said that they chopped each other 79 times last week. That sound that you just heard was Bret Hart banging his head against the wall. 79 chops in their match. And he said it even got the highest rating of the night on Cage Match. Well, I'm sure Tony Khan is very pleased about that. I think Tony Khan has fucking stock in Cage Match, the way he talks about it. So he thanked Hook and said that he should take as much time as he needs to recover from basically hitting himself in the face with a baseball bat at Dynasty. At that point, Tony Schiavone entered the ring and he informed Jericho that Hook is going to be back on Dynamite next week. And Jericho smiled and pretended to be happy about that, and he said that they would all celebrate together on Dynamite. Then he thanked the fans and he waved like the disingenuous shit that he is. So basically what we have here, it is Geritrol. That's what he is now. He is, and I have to say, you want to know my thoughts about Jericho. Who was it? Bash, right? Bash wanted to know my thoughts on the Jericho thing. Here are my thoughts on the Jericho thing. This is the perfect character for Chris Jericho to play. Chris Jericho could no longer be a babyface. Because after the stuff with Kylie Rae and the tweets and everything else, right, he was being booed just unmercilessly. I knew that wasn't going to last forever. But they had to do something with him because it was ridiculous. You're sending him out there, they're singing his song, and then they boo him for the rest of the match. So going heel was the right way to go with him. But what he has hit upon here is this character where he is completely disingenuous. He is completely full of himself. He is completely delusional in every sense of the word. Some might say it's art imitating life, but this is the perfect character for Chris Jericho to be playing right now. Let me look here in this match. He allows Big Bill to do all the heavy lifting, and then he comes in here at the end and he steals all the glory, right? And then he's out there raving about his cage match rating that his match got with Shibata last week. He's smiling and he's waving to people. This big cheesy grin on his face. So I actually think if I have to watch this man on TV every week, since I watch this show, I have to watch his segment. This is actually the perfect gimmick for him. And sometimes it's entertaining. Other times it's not. Tonight, we saw mostly Big Bill do most of the work. And I thought Big Bill looked great killing these dudes. And that brings me to Big Bill. Big Bill is a talented guy. And I think he's a great story because he hit rock bottom in his life. Okay, he had a big alcohol problem. And he hit rock bottom. And he was able to pull himself up out of that. By all accounts, he's in a much better place now. Physically, he's in great shape. Right? He's a big motherfucker, too. He's one of the biggest guys on that entire roster. You would think it wouldn't be that difficult for Tony Khan to find something of substance for him to do. Maybe this is his gateway to that. Maybe Jericho is like his gateway drug to whatever it is they're going to do with Big Bill. My only hope in this, I don't really give a shit about Jericho because Jericho's a made guy. Jericho doesn't need to be pushed. Jericho doesn't need to be champion. Jericho doesn't need to do anything. Jericho doesn't need to be on TV right now. I don't care about him. But if associating Big Bill with Chris Jericho, which has not always worked out well for people, who get sucked into the Jericho vortex, but when this runs its course, and it will, and it won't take that long, my hope, and maybe I'm being naive, my hope is that they have a plan in mind for Big Bill to transition him into something else once he eventually breaks away from Jericho. It can't just be a situation where he's going to be associated with Jericho for a few months, and then when that runs its course, Jericho moves on to his next victim, or I'm sorry, Angle, and then Big Bill just goes back to wrestling on Collision once every 6 weeks. Can't do that. I'd like to see him pushed. I'd like to see them do something with him. Once this is done, I don't know that I have enough faith in Tony Khan to actually deliver on that. In fact, I don't. I don't have faith in Tony Khan to deliver on doing something with Big Bill coming out of this. But I hope I'm wrong. I would like to be wrong about that. Now, our main event tonight, although this was not the end of the show, but our in-ring main event, hey, Brandon Proctor became a sound-off superstar. Thank you, Brandon. Our main event was Adam Copeland defending the TNT title against Brody King in a no disqualification match. Despite this being a no DQ match, how did this match begin? With Adam Copeland trying to work some headlocks. Always the kind of thing I like to see in my no disqualification matches. So Brody escaped. He tried a powerbomb. Copeland low-bridged him to the apron. Copeland charged in for a spear, but he got caught with a kick. And Brody cut him off then with a neck breaker through the ropes. They went to a break. Brody was in control throughout the entire commercial break. King tried for a charge up against the guardrail outside. Copeland moved, and Brody smashed hard into the guardrail, and they showed a replay of it. Copeland then was relentless with chair shots to the back before both men fought to the apron. Copeland avoided a pile driver by gouging the eyes, and that allowed him to hit a DDT on a chair that was placed on the apron. Brody King then rolled to the floor and kind of rolled half of his body under the ring so that he could slice himself open. And that way, when Copeland went to go pick him up, they got a close-up shot of his face, and Brody King was wearing the Crimson Mask. He must have hit a fucking artery or something. I mean, this wasn't Eddie Guerrero in 04, but there was a lot of blood here. I mean, his whole forehead was just covered in blood here, and he was, by the end of the match, he was dripping blood. Back inside, Copeland broke apart a chair before wedging it in the corner. He went to attack. He got leveled with a lariat. Copeland got smashed in the corner, but he dodged the charge with a leg sweep into a crossface with the bar of the chair across the mouth as things went to a break again. Copeland set up a table at ringside. He wanted a suplex. Brody, though, sent Copeland crashing to the floor. Later on, Copeland escaped a powerbomb into a sit-out slam. He wanted a spear. Brody leapfrogged into a spike pile driver in the corner. Both men then rolled to the apron, and Copeland got him up on his shoulders. He hit a Death Valley driver to Brody King on the apron. So now Brody King is just laying there, and he's slowly getting back to his feet. Copeland is in the ring. He charges. He hits a spear through the ropes, and they both crash through the table on the floor. Both men slowly roll back inside. Copeland hits a spear, and he gets the pin to retain the TNT title. After the match, Brody attacked Copeland. Here comes Kyle O'Reilly to make the save, who last week had offered his services. It was a very quick backstage segment, but he offered to have his back against the House of Black, and so he was a man of his word. And he showed up here to make the save, and they clotheslined the big guy out to the floor. As I said at the beginning of this review, when I started out, I think I'm just desensitized at this point watching this show to all of the no DQ, hardcore, bloody matches and, you know, everything with the weapons and we see it all the time with Jon Moxley, but we see it a lot on this show to the point now where with me anyway, it just loses a lot of the value that maybe it would otherwise have because it's like, okay, it's just another week. You know, you may as well just make every match no disqualification on these shows. You know, they don't do DQs very often anyway. So, I mean, what's stopping them in any given match from using chairs and tables and bleeding and stuff? Because the referees probably wouldn't stop the match anyway. It just loses some of its luster because they do so many of them. They worked hard. It was a good match. I'm not saying it was a bad match. It was a good match. I'm not going to sit here. You know, I think with Copeland, sometimes when he goes out there, he tries to have these epic matches. This was not epic, but they had a good match. I knew he was winning, of course, because he beat Buddy. Of course, he's going to beat Brody because all roads lead to Malachi. Hopefully a double or nothing. So anybody following this story could tell that, you know, coming into it. But I like the story they told here. And I'll tell you why. Malachi Black has been trying to bring something out of Adam Copeland. After Copeland beat Buddy Matthews, if you remember, the lights went out. When the lights came back on, Malachi was in the ring. He was standing right next to Copeland. And he told him, go ahead and do it. He was going to give him a concerto. Go ahead, hit him. Hit him with the chair. Even Buddy was on his knees going, hit me, right? He's trying to make him go to a place that he hasn't gone to in a very long time. Earlier in this show, I didn't mention it, but there was a vignette that they aired, a Malachi Black vignette. And in that video, he specifically talked about wanting to have Copeland channel the cold-hearted son of a bitch that he used to be. Well, that's what we got here. He made this man bleed. He beat him with chairs. He put him through tables. This is the story they're telling with Malachi Black. He is on a mission to make Adam Copeland go to a dark place that he used to be, but he hasn't been in a very long time. So I like that story. It's an easy story to understand going into their match, whenever they make that match official, which they probably will next week. But it should lean nicely into Double or Nothing. So I did like that. Now, our kitty was backstage with Mercedes Moné. Yeah, it's funny. When I wrote her name down, I thought it was Arcady. But then I heard Willow in the backstage segment earlier. I think she said Arcady. So I guess that must be how she pronounces it. So anyway, she is, for those who don't know, the new backstage announcer in AEW. But she was with Mercedes Moné, who had a response to Willow Nightingale's promo earlier in the show. She said, we're 18 days away from her in-ring debut in AEW. She said that this is where the best wrestle. That's their new slogan. AEW is where the best wrestle. This is where the big boys play. She said she thrives in the spotlight and under pressure. She said that she would be courtside for the Boston Celtics game tomorrow, and then she would be throwing out the first pitch at the Boston Red Sox game. She said that she is ready for Willow. You know, it's funny. You're in Canada, and so you mentioned the basketball team. You mentioned the baseball team. No mention of the Boston Bruins. That alone should have gotten her heat here in Canada. How do you not mention the hockey team when you're in Edmonton? She said Willow took something, but she can't get back. Time. And she wonders, why did this happen to me, and am I going to be as good as I once was? She said Willow has had the run of her career because of her. And she said that she would wipe Willow's stupid smile off her face and take her title. Again, when I compare the two, to me it's a no contest in a lot of these recent promos. Willow has wiped the floor with her. I don't think that these promos are very good. I'm just waiting for the in-ring debut. I really am. I've been waiting for a long time to get Mercedes back in the ring, and I do think that when the bell rings, she is going to be a big addition to that women's division. On promos, she has not been lighting the world on fire. And I didn't think this was all that great. And if I had to compare the two promos that we got tonight, ding, 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 Willow gets the win. I'm just not impressed so far by these Mercedes promos. And soon enough, they're going to have to decide which direction they want to go with her. Is she going to be a heel? Is she going to be a babyface? Do they want to play it down the middle? You know, where is she going to fall? It'll be really determined by the types of opponents that she has. If we find her wrestling a lot of babyfaces on the roster, then we'll know, okay, that she's basically a heel. So we'll see who they program her with coming out of Double or Nothing after she gets done with Willow. If she wins the title, maybe she could work with Statlander next. You know, if she beats Willow and wins the TBS title, maybe Statlander is going to try to avenge her friend's loss, and then we can get Mercedes and Statlander for the TBS title. I would love to see that. But this woman was born a heel, and that's what she needs to be on this show. Now, elsewhere in the back. Now, mind you, we already have the main event, and it is now after 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are? I didn't know that there was an overrun on this show. So I'm like, wait, what's going on here? Now they're throwing it to another backstage segment with Lexi Nair and Adam Copeland and Kyle O'Reilly. It's like 10:02. So Copeland thanked Kyle for helping him out. Kyle said that I'm happy to help out, but I have a favor to ask. He said that Collision is going to be in his hometown this Saturday, and he asked for a Cope Open match. So Copeland looked at him and he said, so the only reason you came out to help me is to get closer to this. He said, well, job well done, and he agreed to give him the match, and the two shook hands. So that is going to be a TNT title match on Collision this weekend. Collision is live again. I know they've been bounced around. Rampage has been bounced around because of all the NBA games. I believe, though, they said Collision is on TBS this weekend, not TNT. So be aware of that. So we were still not done because we had to get the announcement of who the other members of Anarchy in the Arena were going to be. Out come the Young Bucks with Okada and Jack Perry. Matt says that he buzzed the network and he asked for an overrun. First thing on the agenda here tonight in this terrible country of Canada, Mr. Rainmaker, Kazuchika Okada, has a note for Kenny Omega. And Okada said, hey Kenny, the best bout machine says, get well soon. And he did the Kenny Omega gun hand gesture. Matt said that, Tony Khan, I know you're watching in Jacksonville. You're the best boss I've ever worked for. And he hopes that he's feeling better also. He only wishes that he would have gotten out of his own way and realized that they were only here to make AEW a better place. But they had no choice but to give Tony Khan a Tony Khan driver. And Kenny Omega, last week you decided to end a 15-year friendship, so they had to give an EVP trigger to the EVP. Nick Jackson says the only reason FTR saved Kenny's ass is not because they like him, but it's because they hate the Young Bucks. He then accepted the anarchy in the arena match for Double or Nothing. FTR's music plays. Here comes FTR bald. Here comes FTR hair. They walk out on stage. I don't know, by the way. I only noticed yesterday. I have no idea how long this has been for, but I noticed yesterday that FTR bald has blocked me on Twitter. Was it something I said? I don't know. But anyway, he got on the mic and he said that he knew it wouldn't be easy to find two guys to team with them against a couple of EVPs. But he thinks they found a couple of guys with big enough balls for the job. And the first man who walked out was Eddie Kingston. And Eddie Kingston got a big reaction here from the fans. They were happy to see him. He was all amped up. He's on stage with them, pacing back and forth. As we await the announcement of the fourth man on Team AEW, which was the American Dragon, Bryan Danielson. His first appearance since he faked whatever injury he was faking there at the end of that match with Will Ospreay. Looked like he was dying in the middle of the ring. But Bryan Danielson comes out on stage. Big reaction from everybody in Edmonton. They were not expecting to see him. They all hit the ring. They had a face-off. Matt Jackson said that don't even think about putting your hands on us. And Kingston swung first. We got a wild brawl to end the show with security and referees all frantically trying to separate everyone. Hot close to the show. Got a big brawl here to go off the air with. Kingston and Danielson, they have had their issues before. But if you remember, after the last match they had, and I don't know if it would have been that match in the Continental Classic, or did they wrestle at Revolution? I think they did. Didn't they wrestle at Revolution? Whatever that last match was that they had, it was great stuff. And then there was a backstage segment in the trainer's room where Eddie got all emotional. Like, Brian's sitting there, Eddie's over there, and he's talking about, all I ever wanted was, you know, your respect, and he's putting them over. And so it's all good now between the two of them, but they've had their issues in the past. I just don't know why Bryan Danielson always needs to be a part of these. You know, this is going to be the third one now. This is the third Anarchy in the Arena match in as many years. And Danielson has been a part of both of the previous ones. So here it just feels to me like they shoehorned him in there. But Okada's in there. So he has that history with Okada. And I guess if you're going to do a Team AEW, then you can make the argument that, okay, you would want a Bryan Danielson on Team AEW. Kingston, I understood, because they actually had some segments on TV in the last couple of months where Kingston, you know, he kind of got up in their faces. And they threatened him. They threatened to fine him. And so we already knew that there were issues between Kingston and the Young Bucks, but then Danielson just, they kind of threw his name out of nowhere. And it just felt a little bit to me like, all right, we just need an excuse to get him on the show, and so we'll kind of, you know, work him in there. Not everything on the show tonight was a hit by any means. There were definitely some segments that were just kind of there. But I did think it was smart to have Omega announce the Anarchy in the Arena stip early and tease out the Mystery Men. Just in terms of trying to get people to stick around with the show, because you look at the ratings pattern for Dynamite on most weeks, and they start strong, and part of that, I'm sure, is the lead-in from Big Bang Theory, and then it's just a steady decline, you know, for most segments on the show. If you were going to try to get people to stick around, that's one way to do it. So I actually think it was very smart for them to save the reveal for later on. And I like the swerve countdown, you know, the first hour of the show. Hey, you know, we're 45 minutes away from the face-to-face between Swerve Strickland and Christian Cage. It's important to just make your champion feel special. And they're going to have to try to do that at a time when he is clearly secondary to the main angle on the show, which at this moment, going into this pay-per-view, does not directly involve him. Hopefully, after we get beyond Double or Nothing, that will change. But we have Forbidden Door coming up at the end of June. And I don't know what they're going to do there. I don't know, because to me, the whole New Japan versus AEW thing, the bloom is off the rose in a lot of ways. There was talk about involving CMLL, and I honestly don't give a shit. Stardom, all right, yeah, I get that. You want to have a couple of Stardom matches or some Stardom talent on the show, that's fine. But what are they going to do with Swerve? You know, I mean, are they just going to put Swerve in there against, a New Japan guy? Again, we need to have Swerve a little more actively involved in this whole Elite story coming out of Double or Nothing. But that was, overall, that was Dynamite tonight. It was a mix of good and not so good, but I did think that it was a hot angle to close the show on. The numbers are not reflecting it so far, but again, this is something that they had to do. They had to come up with their one big story, and they have that story now. And I don't know when Kenny Omega is going to be back. I don't know when MJF is going to be back. He just had surgery, so we're probably not going to see him for a very long time. Even when we do see him, they're probably going to stick him back with Adam Cole and the Undisputed Kingdom. How dead is that fucking group? I'd like to get MJF involved in this story. But they're missing some big players right now. Hangman Page is still out. I think he had some personal things to tend to, whatever's going on with him. So it's going to be interesting to see who they plug into this story as the summer progresses. But they better hope that it's a success. And that they can draw in some new viewers with it, because they seem to be banking everything on it. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll. What did you think of Dynamite from Edmonton tonight? 42.7% thumbs up, 25% thumbs in the middle, and 31% thumbs down. Not a great score at all for tonight's show. Yeah, Arby says, stay away from the House of Torture. Please, yes. You know, I was shocked to find out that the House of Torture, you know, Evil's group in New Japan, apparently they're like the top merch seller. So evidently they get a lot of heat that they're just fucking boring. But they keep pushing them. We have our own House of Torture, though, in AEW. It's called the Learning Tree. So we don't need another one. We don't need another House of Torture here in AEW. All right, let's take a look at your super chats. And thank you guys very much for those of you who do support. Let me take a look here and see what we got from early on here. And we'll run through these. There aren't too many of them, so we'll run through these pretty quick. Let me start here with Dr. Bropio. Forgive us, folks, in Edmonton. Bropio, I think, was at the show tonight. Forgive us, folks, in Edmonton if we are not bringing the energy or noise tonight, but NHL playoffs is no excuse. F yes, it is. Too focused and excited for game one and playoffs, I totally forgot they were coming into town. So yes, that's right, Bropio was there. Hey, Bropio, thank you. Kentucky Dried Chicken. If I have to make a description of the AEW wrestling product, it's like eating peanuts, walnuts, almonds, and sunflower seeds. He says, nothing sweet. Bobby's World. Saw Bobby's World last night. $10 super chat. Rewatching Monday's stream, my chat was frozen on Paul Hamilton's bomb. That's right, Paul dropped the $200 bomb. In the tribute to Kevin Dunn's beaver, the chat unfroze, and my screen was filled with a million beavers. Thanks for that. Yeah, it was like beaver mania on Monday night. It's always good to have beaver mania any night, but we have beaver mania on Monday night, all the beaver emojis. I mean, it's like nothing I had ever seen before. I haven't seen that many beavers since college. Boobah. With the $9.99, TNT rocked. I loved regular super chatters that you have on your streams and how they shocked JD with the crazy, funny, wacky stuff they say. And you, like a proud father, had to depend on them. LOL. I love it. I said we had a bunch of familiar faces. We did have a bunch of familiar faces who joined us last night that made me feel right at home. So you guys rock, man. Hey, Booba, thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Uh-oh, Barry. Coming in with the 15. Hey, the Juliet, Boots cooked on yours and JD's show last night. Yeah, Boots did a run-in on TNT last night and dropped a $500 super chat. Of course, Boots is nowhere to be found tonight, but Boots dropped a $500 bomb last night. You talk about showing up and showing out. It was Boots to Asses last night. That's what that was. Dark Effect with the $10. If someone can survive a pile driver on steel steps and be up in 60 seconds or less, how am I supposed to take anything else that happens seriously? Love your content here. Your Dark Side reviews are great. Thank you, Dark Effect. We got one more. This is it, season finale. So I just watched the episode today on Black Saturday, and I will be doing my review on the podcast this weekend. So check that out. And yes, I agree with you on the pile driver on the steel steps. Kel Mickens with the $9.99. Solo, thank you for all that you do. I have a huge request. Could you send good vibes? I have two law school exams coming up, and I have so much to study due to dealing with a bad case of depression. Kel, I am sending lots of positive vibes to you, brother. You're going to kill it. I know you're going to kill it. You're going to do just fine. You sound like me when I used to cram for all my exams. I was like, yeah, I got plenty of time to study. 9 o'clock the night before. And now sounds like a good time. I used to do that with term papers. I have the whole term to work on this shit. 8 o'clock the night before. You know, I should probably start working on that term paper. And then somehow I still got A minus. I don't know how, but stayed up all night. I got it done. But Kel, man, good luck. I think you're going to kill it. Alex Ochoa. I think you mean FTR Bald and FTR Gun. Yes, thank you. Thank you for the correction. That's right. FTR Bald and FTR Armed. Maybe we should call him Armed. Barry with the $15. I just saw the SmackDown where Muhammad Hassan was drafted to the show, and I've really liked him. It's cool to see a heel that's hated by all the fans and all the faces and the heels. He got a lot of heat. Unfortunately for him, he got a little too much heat, and it ended up ruining his entire career, unfortunately. Uffman Entertainment, by the time you read this, it will be May 9th, so can you give a mega happy birthday shout out to Mrs. Uffman herself, Jenny? And yes, she is a sound-off girl. Those are the best girls, are the sound-off girls. Well, happy birthday to Jenny. Actually, happy, a mega happy birthday to Jenny. I'm not going to ask you how old you are, because that's not something that you ask a lady. Unless you want to get slapped. But I hope you have a great birthday, and it's up to Uffman to treat her to a very nice dinner. Hey, King Nivrem, just subscribed. Again, we're getting very close to 80K. So, one of these people may end up being 80K. But we are within 100 subscribers of 80,000 here on the channel. So thank you, guys. David Thering with a $5 super chat. There's David. What's up, Solomonster? Just getting in. I will have to watch your stream back for the review. Just wanted to say great work on TNT last night. Cheers. Cheers to you too, David. I saw David in the chat last night. Thank you, brother. I appreciate that. There's Thomas in the chat. Shout out to Thomas. And Bread Hart. I was told that Jay White was like the Alan Rickman / Hans Gruber of wrestling. And I'm still waiting to see that on AEW. I don't even get the analogy. He's the Hans Gruber of wrestling? Hans Gruber is like, he's one of the all-time great, if not greatest, movie villains of all time. I wouldn't call Jay White the greatest villain of all time. He's just a fucking great wrestler. Who made that comparison? What a weird comparison to make. I don't even understand it. Hans Gruber was quite great, though. Until, you know, we got to Die Hard 3, and then his brother wasn't very happy about what happened to poor Hans Gruber. Chris Manson just came in with a super chat. I see you. $4.99 from Chris. Is the end goal Mariah May winning the championship or costing Toni Storm? That is the question. At first, I thought it was more a matter of costing her the title. But the more that this plays out, I'm thinking that the end goal here is going to be Mariah May challenging her for the championship and trying to win it off of her. And doing so, since they got Mercedes tied up with the TBS title, and I still have absolutely no idea when Jamie Hayter is coming back, so I think that Mariah May winning the title at Wembley, I think is a very distinct possibility. Well, the goal tonight was 450 for Be the Booker. I'm going to have to start lowering the goals here for the AEW stream. I'm telling you, the AEW product right now just feels fucking dead. It really does. It just feels dead, unfortunately. The goal was 450, we're at 401, so we fell short of our goal tonight. Very disappointing. Very disappointing. Hey, Uffman with the $5. The missus says, thank you, Solomonster and chat. And he just gave her age away, just like that. Now, did you get her permission to give her age away? Because you're going to be sleeping on the couch tonight. He just blasted it out for everybody to see. Again, happy birthday to her. I just love how he just like just puts it out there. I love it. Chris says, by the way, Britt Baker looks ripped. Possibly returning along with Jamie. Did she post a picture on Twitter or something? I haven't even seen a photo of Britt Baker recently. I think there's a very good chance they will return together. I'm just hoping that they've been ready for a while and they're just waiting for the right moment to reintroduce them. And then maybe we can get Jamie and Toni at Wembley. But if not, Mariah May is the only one that really makes sense. I mean, they've been dropping so many little hints, you know, for so long. Even like with Mina coming out and being the one to rescue her instead of Toni. They're planting little hints here and there for the eventual breakup. He got permission? Okay. I hope so. So apparently Britt posted something on Instagram. Okay. Well, I'm not following her on Instagram, so that would explain why I didn't see it. Miguel says, I predict that Jey Uso is going to beat Ilya Dragunov, and it's going to be a mid-King of the Ring final with Tama against Jey. Interesting. Tama Tonga against Jey Uso in the finals of the King of the Ring? I don't like that. I don't like that idea. Especially if the winner is going to get a future world championship match. We just saw Jey Uso wrestle for the world heavyweight title. I don't like that. I hope you're wrong. My guess is Drew McIntyre costs Jay, Ilya advances. We get Gunther and Ilya in the semifinals. That's how they need to book it. Uffman with the $10 super chat. Yes, she gave me permission. Also, Britt posted a pic with DDP, I believe, and she is ripped. Oh, well, if she's with DDP, of course. I mean, that guy can transform anybody. Transformed me a few years ago. I got to get back on it. The Juliet Dynamite Kid's nephew to Dynamite Kid's nephew to debut against Dax on Collision. Well, that's cool. I didn't even know he had a nephew that wrestled. Apparently now he does. Gunther is winning. He's my pick. The minute that Drew went out of the tournament, I said Gunther is winning. All right, guys. Well, the next time I will be with you is going to be SmackDown on Friday night. And we know what the men's matches are going to be in the first round of the King of the Ring tournament. You know, LA Knight and Santos Escobar. AJ Styles, I think, is wrestling Randy Orton. Carmelo Hayes and Baron Corbin. And I don't remember what the other match. Oh, Bobby Lashley against Tama Tonga. They have not said a word about Queen of the Ring. There were some fake images floating around a few days ago about matches like Tiffany Stratton against Blair Davenport and stuff. Those are all manufactured. Those are all fake. So I don't know what the Queen of the Ring matches are going to be, but we're going to get a bunch of them on TV on Friday night. So we'll be able to flesh out the tournaments a little bit more, and we will talk about it then. Abusika with the $1.99. Greetings, Solo. I am from Nakasongola. Yeah, I asked that question last night because Abusika popped up on our TNT stream over on the other channel, and I just couldn't I couldn't remember where he was from or if he had told me before. So Abusika, thank you, man. Thank you for joining last night and tonight. I appreciate that. Wasn't Queen of the Ring supposed to be revealed on The Bump today? I don't know. I thought that they were going to make all the remaining announcements on Monday on Raw. And then they didn't, because they were probably still, they probably right now are still trying to figure out what the women's matches are. They probably still haven't even put the tournament together yet on the SmackDown side. So I don't know. I don't know what the matches are. Okay, so from what I just saw here out of the corner of my eye, I see that we have hit the goal after all. Another buzzer beater here. You're cutting these things awfully close. We have hit our goal tonight. 450 plus for Be the Booker. Thank you. Thank you very much. Hey, Zizu is 1 month away. Excuse me. 1 month away from 2 years of channel membership. Where has the time gone? Thank you, Solo, for everything that you do. Hey, Zizu, man, thank you for 23 months as a Sound Off superstar. All right, let's get to it. It's time to Be the Booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to Be the Booker.
Another buzzer beater here at the very last minute. Always some drama with you guys. Way too close. Yeah, a little too close. I was about to get the hell out of here. You're lucky I didn't. I'm going to have to start making the goal 300 likes on Wednesdays. It's pathetic. Hey, Tech Nation. Tech Nation just gifted a channel membership to Slap Talk. And we just landed on the Spirit Squad in Tag Team Be the Booker. Former Raw Tag Team Champions. Look at this crew here. You got Nikki, you got Mikey, you got Kenny, you got whoever the fuck that guy is. Johnny, right? Is that Johnny on the very end? Who is that guy in the middle? Mitch? Is that Mitch? Shouldn't all their names end with a Y? Johnny, Kenny, Nikki, Mikey, and Mitch. It doesn't make any sense. All right. Spirit Squad against who? I already know what I'm pushing here. Spirit Squad against the Spirit Squad. Yep. That sounds about right. The Spirit Squad against the Spirit Squad. They're going to lay a beatdown on themselves. Amazing. Amazing. Is that true? Mitch dated Tori Wilson? When the hell did that happen? That can't be true. I don't believe you. I don't believe you. It's a Spirit Squad civil war. See, nobody wants to see the Bloodline civil war. They want the Spirit Squad civil war. And the crowd goes mid. Crowd? You're assuming there'll be a crowd. All right, women's be the booker. We begin with, oh my God. It is Cameron from her Tough Enough days. My favorite match was with Melina and Alicia Fox. Remember Steve Austin's priceless reaction? She had no clue. She had absolutely no clue. And Stone Cold, his mind was blown. I already know where this is headed. This is not going well at all here. This B the Booker is an all-timer, says the chat's going so fast. Whoever said that. All right. Ariane, I guess that's her name, right? Ariane, Cameron, whatever. Ariane gonna go one-on-one with Wendy Chu. Oh my God. Oh my God, what is going on here? Wendy Chu and Ariane. The Spirit Squad against the Spirit Squad. If you want to know how to kill a territory, these are the matches you book. Take notes. Take notes. Learn from my mistakes, kids. Don't be like me. We just need a Hail Mary in this main event. This is right now, honest to God, this is shaping up to be possibly the worst installment of Be the Booker that I have ever booked. This may truly end up being the worst. All right, here we go. One more. We begin with Roosh. We got the horns here in this main event. This is the opposite of banger after banger after banger. Roosh will go one-on-one in the main event with... Oh, I should probably spin it first. John Cena. Okay. All right. Saved from the abyss. John Cena against Roosh. Finally. An actual marquee match. Thank you, John Cena. Holy shit. That was going down a very bad road. That was almost the worst that we have ever done. Almost. Amazing. Now, it gets the bell. It gets the bell. Hey, Devin from New Jersey. My friend's colleague thinks that Jericho hasn't taken a break yet. It's because when he does, it will be for good. What do you say to this? He's taken breaks before. What are you talking about? He goes on tour with Fozzy. He'll disappear sometimes for weeks on end. It's not like he's never taken a break. I just want it to be an extended break. Maybe he could take a cruise around the world. How about that? Right, that'll take a while. Is Benoit in Be the Booker? No, he is not. Uffman Entertainment, we probably should not have hit the goal tonight. You know what? I regret the fact that we actually hit the goal tonight after that. That's the thing with Be the Booker. You never know what you're going to get. It's totally random. I mean, I can't believe we landed on the Spirit Squad twice. That's the first time that's ever happened, but you just never know what you're going to get. So if we hit the break, if we hit the goal on Friday, we'll try to do better. If you missed it, again, do go ahead and check out the discussion that I have with JD on his channel on Tuesday Night Titans last night. I do think you'll enjoy it. And we're going to be doing that each and every Tuesday night over on his channel. It was a lot of fun last night. We're going to have a lot of fun on this channel because we have SmackDown coming up on Friday. And then we have episode 861 of the podcast coming up this weekend, where I will not only talk about the season finale of Dark Side of the Ring, but I will be talking about Ric Flair's very busy week and the King of the Ring, among other things as well. A lot of news. So thank you guys for the support. Be well. Stay safe. Power Spying Game says the birthday stream from 2022 was the worst Be the Booker. I don't remember what we did in that Be the Booker. Refresh my memory before I get out of here. Yeah, David, if I want to scare people away from the segment, I could tell them that. I want to hide that. I don't want them to know that. I want them to just not even know that segment even took place tonight. But yeah, refresh my memory here, because I don't remember what I booked in Be the Booker that night. You're telling me about the birthday stream from 2 years ago. How the hell am I supposed to remember what I booked that night? Hey, Breezy, have a good night, man. Well, anyway, you can leave a comment and let me know, or I'll have to go back and check it out. But in any event, be well, stay safe. Thank you for getting me close to 80,000. Hit that subscribe button if you are not yet subscribed, and maybe in the next 24 to 48 hours, maybe. It's the road to 80K. Hopefully it's a short road. I'll see you guys back here on Friday night. Maybe we can celebrate. Take care, guys.